Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Love and Neckties by Lacey Black. Narrated by Alex Kidd and Rachel DeLude. Chapter 1. Samuel. I adjust the small angel pendant on Mrs. Hammond's suit collar one final time, making sure everything is just right. Soft, classical music pipes through the speakers, while the video montage of her life plays on the screen in back. The flowers and plants are displayed perfectly, and the family is ready to say their final goodbyes with loved ones who came to share their condolences. Her visitation will begin soon. Just a typical Tuesday for me. I make my way to the main office, where Elma, our assistant, types an obituary for our website. She struggles with uploading to the site, yet can type like a court stenographer. Elma came from the typewriter era, and while she's the master in making sure the obits are worded correctly, she struggles with just about every other aspect of the process.
"Why does this line keep blinking at me? It moved up the page, and now my words are typing in the wrong spot."
The older woman complains, jabbing at the delete button with her frail finger. The cursor is supposed to move and blink, Elma. If it's not in the right spot, it's because you moved it, I tell her calmly. This is a daily occurrence, and something I'm used to fixing.
"I just don't see the point of these machines. The Royal Epoch over there was working just fine,"
she grumbles, pointing to the antique device that hasn't been used in more than 2 decades, yet refuses to let me get rid of in case they come back in style. As I move to look at the screen over her shoulder, I'm assaulted with the scent of mothballs and Avon perfume. Timeless, I believe, is what she calls it, though. It really just reminds me of my grandma's bathroom when I was a kid. I move the mouse, demonstrating once more how she can do so herself, but she's already getting up and moving on to filing. Elma's the only woman to have ever stepped foot in the office of Hanson Funeral Home. Her late husband, Ernest, started the business in 1964, with Elma running the office with an iron fist. In the 80s, their son Robert joined the family business, eventually taking over a few years ago when Ernest passed away. Now, Rob's son, Aaron, has finished school and joined his dad in their family legacy. Unfortunately, Aaron doesn't actually care about working. That leaves Rob and me, the one the young Hanson leans on to do, well, everything. I don't mind, though. I'm as dedicated to this business as the old man was before his heart attack. God rest his soul.
"The Hammond family should be here soon," Elma states as I complete the upload of our newest obituary to the website.
"I'll meet them at the door," I reply, heading toward the wooden front entrance of our funeral home. I stop by the fireplace first, checking the knot on my navy blue tie in the mirror. It's already flawless, of course, but I always verify before meeting a family, or before leaving the house. A perfectly executed double Windsor knot is on display, my favorite knot to tie. I learned how to tie a necktie when I was 7, your basic 4-in-hand knot. Over the years, I've learned 4 additional ways to display my tie, most of them named after British royals, and all based on the type of collar on the crisp dress shirt I'm wearing. I even took an online course on folding handkerchiefs. You never know when that will come in handy. With my tie in perfect order, I head to the front door, holding it open just as the family arrives. I greet the grieving daughter and son-in-law, Debbie and Stuart, as well as their 3 children, handing them a small packet of tissues as they enter the funeral home. It's one thing I've learned over the years. Be prepared. Always. I escort them to the entrance of the parlor, where their loved one waits. They slowly make their way inside to say their goodbyes, while I wait just outside the door. After 15 minutes, they come out to take a breather. "I'll open the doors at 4 o'clock to the public," I tell them.
"Thank you, Samuel. You've been most helpful during this time,"
Debbie says, and I can tell already she's about to hug me. Grievers always hug, and why they feel the need to hug me is beyond my comprehension, especially when a handshake will suffice. Handshakes are professional. Yet here I am, being wrapped in her arms, a slight sniffle pulling my attention to the fact she probably just wiped her nose on my jacket sleeve. It's my pleasure to see your mother's final wishes were seen to, I insist, awkwardly patting her back in an effort to return her affection.
Oh, I almost forgot,
Debbie says, taking a step back and wiping her nose on the crumpled-up tissue in her hand. I try not to think about all of those germs.
I have someone stopping by after the visitation this evening.
Oh, I ask, running through tonight's schedule of events and coming up empty for an end-of-the-night visitor.
Yes, my Reiki healer is stopping by to see Mom.
I'm sorry, Reiki? I ask, racking my mind for what in the world that means. We've had our fair share of pastors, priests, and rabbis in the house, but I'm not sure what a Reiki healer is.
Oh, it's this wonderfully relaxing Japanese technique that assists with many things, like your body's natural healing process, relieving emotional stress, and improving your body's overall well-being.
I stare at the woman as she easily pitches the concept of this Reiki bullshit as if she were reading it out of the brochure. And this will help your mother how? I find myself asking, unable to see the connection.
Well, there's nothing better than sending Mom off to her final resting place when she's free of stress, right?
Well, she's dead, so...
Anyway, my Reiki healer has agreed to stop by after the visitation tonight to perform a treatment on Mom. It'll only take about half an hour or so,
Debbie says matter-of-factly. Okay, I'm sure I can accommodate your... healer.
Oh, thank you so much, Samuel. This means a lot to me,
Debbie adds before. Yep, you guessed it, pulling me into another tight hug.
Mom's spirit will fly free thanks to this woman.
I bet she will, I mumble, standing perfectly still as the woman finishes her hug. Before she completely removes her hands from my body, however, she reaches up and adjusts the knot on my tie. My heart stops in my chest as this woman paws all over my perfectly executed double Windsor. Completely horrified, I gently pull back, reaching up automatically and tweaking the soft silk tie. I can tell the tie is askew and not at all where it should be. The tightness in my throat is almost choking as I try not to make a big show of moving it back into place.
You're such a handsome man, Samuel. I can't believe you haven't married yet,
Debbie says, heading over to the mirror and adding a second coat of light lipstick. Guests will start to arrive any moment. I'm going to greet those attending at the front door, I state professionally, completely glossing over her comments as if I didn't hear her. Debbie just nods and heads to the main parlor, her family hot on her heels. As soon as she's gone, I step up to the mirror and frantically correct my tie. I can practically see her finger smudges on the pristine material, even though they probably aren't visible to the naked eye. But I know they're there, taunting and mocking me with their imperfections. I do the best I can to eliminate the tiny wrinkles from her fingers and head to the entrance. It's only a few minutes later that the early birds start to arrive to pay their respects. I can always count on them to arrive 10 to 15 minutes prior to the start of any visitation. There's no time but their time when it comes to schedules. Most of them will head out to dinner by 4:30, followed by Jeopardy in their favorite recliner by 6, and napping by 6:30. The elderly are as predictable as the sun rising in the morning and setting in the evening. Though, as much as their early arrival used to bother me, I completely understand it on a personal level. If you're not 10 to 15 minutes early, then you're already late. It may drive my family crazy, my constant need to be on time, but that's better than the alternative. Tardiness makes you sloppy, and sloppy leads to mistakes. Mistakes create chaos, and the thought of chaos in my life brings a cold sweat to my skin. Good evening. I greet to everyone as I open the main entrance door, shaking hands with those gentlemen who offer theirs. Some of them even feel the need to fill a few uncomfortable seconds with small talk before they step into line with the rest of those in attendance. Usually it's about the weather or something else as casual, but other times they try to ask me how the local high school football team is doing or even how the fishing is this time of year. Things I have no interest in following. As the evening draws to a close and the visitors trickle down to only immediate family in attendance, I make my way to the daughter and explain tomorrow's schedule. We'll be set up at the church by 8:30. The family should arrive by 9, with the one-hour visitation set for 9:30 to 10:30. Then, we'll have the pallbearers help move your loved one to the church chapel for the funeral service.
Thank you so much, Samuel. I appreciate you taking care of Mom's final wishes.
Debbie states, her eyes dry, yet tired and puffy. We appreciate you trusting us with these details. Debbie steps forward and places a warm hand on my cheek.
You're such a good boy,
she says with a sad smile. I don't scoff at her comment, even though I bristle a bit on the inside. I haven't exactly been a boy in nearly 2 decades, although, if I'm being honest, I never was a typical boy. I like things in order, even as a child. I enjoyed making sure lists were completed on a satisfactory level, even if they pertain to chores. My siblings never appreciated my obligation to following the rules, and even now as adults, they find great pleasure in ruffling my feathers. I've also always felt a strong appreciation for proper dress. You've heard the phrase, dress to impress, right? Well, I live by that rule. You never know who you'll run into at the grocery store or at the dentist. In a small town, your next business referral could come at any moment by anyone. Always put your best foot forward, and that includes your appearance. I'm the oldest of 4. At 36, I've been taking care of them since my teenage years. When our dad left following an affair, I readily stepped into his shoes as the man of the house. It was a role I filled easily, even if my siblings didn't find it necessary at the time. Mom ran a bed and breakfast out of our home, and her days, and most of her evenings, were filled with caring for others. That left me to make sure they were showered, transported to and from ball practices or club activities, not to mention helping take care of the homestead. Harper is 3 years younger than me and owns a boutique in town. Kiss Me Goodnight carries unmentionables and other body care products. And despite the questionable product line she sells, her business is doing well, and for that I'm grateful. Harper lives with Latham Douglas, a gentleman she attended school with. They reunited following his extended stay in the service and have been living together for a few months now. Jensen is 3rd in line at 31 years old. He's a brilliant landscape architect, and despite the fact he always has dirt under his fingernails, I can appreciate the fact he works hard and has an eye for design. Jensen recently reunited with his former high school love and moved into her family's estate at the edge of town. Jensen is also the father of my only nephew, Max, who recently turned 5. Finally, there's Marissa, my youngest sister. Since she was a small child, Marissa knew what she wanted to do with her life. Now, at 29, she is fulfilling that dream by assisting our mother with her bed and breakfast. She manages much of the day-to-day aspect of the business and particularly enjoys handling the cooking feature of owning one of the few bed and breakfasts in our small North Carolina town, Rockland Falls.
Are you ready, dear? Let's get home and rest, Stuart says, placing his hand on his wife's back and gently guiding her toward the exit.
Yes, of course.
I meet the couple and their children at the exit, holding the door wide for them to pass through.
Oh, don't forget my Reiki healer will be here any minute,
Debbie adds, glancing at her watch.
She must be running a few minutes late.
My eye twitches at the thought, but I don't let my irritation show. No worries, Debbie. I'll hang around a few more minutes until she arrives.
Thank you, Samuel.
Then, they're gone, leaving me alone in the funeral home with her deceased mother. I check my watch and notice this individual is approaching 15 minutes late, assuming she was instructed to arrive at the end of the visitation. I activate the door buzzer, which allows us to hear a noise every time the front door opens. This helps when we're off somewhere within the building. We don't always have to lock the door. Once I know I'll be made aware of her arrival, I head to the family room. This is an area down the hallway where family can gather to take a break. We offer a television, comfortable seating, and a mini kitchen area. Most families will bring in food or have it delivered to the visitation. Tonight's family cleaned up after themselves, so the only thing I need to do is take out the trash and wash down the table and counter. That job takes all of 4 minutes, and once it's complete, I head back to the front, turning off the lights as I go. When the clock strikes 8:30, I figure this Reiki quack isn't coming. Maybe there was some sort of magical voodoo healing emergency. Flipping the lights off in the office, I step out, locking the door behind me, just as the front entrance opens.
It's raining harder than a cow pissing on a flat rock.
I know that voice, and those crude words. Exhaling, I stick my keys in my suit pants pocket and turn to the doorway. Freedom.
Chapter 2. Freedom.
Sammy! I exclaim, shaking the rain from my drowned hair. It hangs heavy and limply around my face, and the water flies freely around me. Samuel sighs dramatically, which, of course, is just the response I'm going for.
It's Samuel,
he retorts, rather heatedly, and I have to fight the smile. Reaching up, I wring my brown hair out, watching the small droplets of water fall on the floor. My long bohemian skirt clings to my legs, and my top hangs awkwardly around my shoulders. Seriously, this rain is nuts.
It was forecasted, he replies, straightening his tie and avoiding eye contact.
I've always felt like I made him nervous, which is why I go to such extended lengths to do just that.
I was just locking up,
he adds, finally turning those blue-green eyes my way. He watches me for a few seconds, his Adam's apple bobbing in his throat as he swallows.
You know, they make these great inventions called umbrellas.
I wave my hand dismissively. A little water isn't going to hurt me. I take in the darkened foyer and ask,
Were you leaving?
He sighs again.
Yes, Freedom, I was heading out for the evening. I have to return at 7.
But didn't Debbie tell you I was coming? He crosses his arms, and I try to ignore how his arms look with his suit stretched over his biceps.
She did, but I was under the impression you were arriving at the end of the visitation. That was more than 30 minutes ago.
Where's the fire? Or did you have plans this evening? I ask, waggling my eyebrows suggestively. Samuel clears his throat and straightens.
I could have had plans.
Of course you could have. I hear the coin club meets on Tuesday nights at the library. I give him the best, sweetest smile I possess, showing all of my teeth. Again, he straightens his necktie, almost like a nervous twitch. There's something about his necktie that does weird things to my lady parts. I can almost picture Mr. Anal Retentive wearing one of his fancy silk ties and nothing else.
I'm not part of the coin club, but I'm starting to get hungry. Can we get the weird part of the evening over with, please?
I strut past him, my wet skirt cooling my overheated legs. He doesn't make a sound as he follows me to the parlor, my bangle bracelets clanking together as we go. Samuel turns the light back on, and my client for this evening comes into view. Technically, Debbie is the client, my client, but that's beside the point.
when she asked me at the end of our session on Sunday night to perform a Reiki treatment on her mother, I readily agreed. I didn't realize her mother had passed until the end of the conversation, and there was no going back, especially when she agreed to pay me twice my fee to accommodate the odd circumstance. Have I ever performed on a dead woman? That'd be a big fat no, but the dollar signs kept flashing through my mind, and honestly, I couldn't turn down the job. Being a Reiki practitioner doesn't exactly pay all the bills. That's why I work part-time at my bestie's lingerie shop in town, as well as work as a part-time massage therapist. That's actually what I went to school for, but I'm always interested in trying new things, which is how I became a certified Reiki healer, too. Samuel doesn't say a word as I pull out my phone and find some meditation music, but I can feel his presence behind me. He stays back, yet is close enough that goosebumps prickle my skin. Of course, it could be a result of being soaking wet, too. Clearing my mind, I step up to the coffin, only slightly weirded out with what I'm about to do. I place my non-dominant hand above her head and slowly start to scan down her body, keeping my hand 4 inches or so above her body. What are you doing? Samuel's words startle me. They're soft and full of skepticism. I'm scanning her body to see if there is anywhere she needs additional healing, I whisper, realizing this part of the process probably isn't necessary, all things considered. Samuel snorts a laugh. Unless she's going to get up and walk out of here, I don't think any additional healing will help, he mumbles. Usually my client would be lying on my massage table, but there really isn't any other option here. So I take position at the head of the coffin, sliding over the pillar, holding a massive flower arrangement as I go. Let me, he says, carefully shifting the flowers until they're out of my way and I can stand at her head. I place my hand over her head, grimacing slightly at the thought of touching her. No, this is not my first deceased individual I've touched, but it is the first one I'll be touching for a prolonged amount of time. Ignoring the shiver that slides down my spine, I position my hand above the third eye in her forehead. For the next 30 minutes, I proceed to conduct Reiki over Debbie's dead mother. Samuel remains quiet and out of the way while I work, though I can feel his presence in the room. When the session is complete, I feel confident Debbie's mother is spiritually ready for her afterlife. All finished, I state, moving away from the coffin, turning off the meditation music playing from my cell phone. Samuel stares at me as I approach. That was the biggest pile of bullshit I've ever witnessed. I gape at him, trying to give my best shocked expression, when all I really want to do is laugh. Samuel is the last person on Earth I'd expect to trust and believe in the healing powers of Reiki. He's more of a hold it in your hand or witness it with your own eyes to believe it, man. I can't believe you said that, Sammy. After witnessing her relaxation and ultimate spiritual healing in the flesh, you still doubt the power. The tips of his ears turn red. It's Samuel, and I'm pretty sure she's already as relaxed as she can get. It's pretty much my goal in life to argue and make him as uncomfortable as humanly possible, which is why I follow up with, I think you could benefit from a few Reiki treatments. I step closer, invading his personal space. His Adam's apple bobs again, letting me know I'm affecting him. Oh, what I would do to get a hold of your chakra. Yes, I intentionally make it sound dirty just to watch him blush. He does.
You keep your paws away from my chakra.
I step back and turn around, grabbing my purse that I discarded on the floor. One of these days, Sammy, I'm going to get a hold of your chakra and make you feel so good. You'll never want me to stop having my hands on your chakra. Grinning inwardly to myself, I turn back around to face him. His eyes, however, are cast downward, where my ass was. Knowing he was just busted ogling my behind, he quickly makes his way to the flower arrangement, which he had moved, and writes it.
It actually takes him several minutes as he steps back and inspects the angles of the flowers multiple times to ensure it's displayed properly, which I find comical, considering tomorrow he's moving them all to the church for the funeral service. You know, no one is going to see that bad boy, right? Live on the edge. Let it be out of place for the night. He glances over his shoulder, giving me his best zip it freedom look before turning back around and adjusting the display once more. This time, he crouches down, looking at it from the floor angle. Why? No freaking clue. My eyes automatically start to scan his physique. Samuel isn't as muscular as his younger brother, Jensen, who works outside all day, every day, but you can still tell he works out. His arms hold just enough definition to them without screaming gym rat, and his ass is firm, framed in a pair of expensive trousers. Once, I even caught sight of him shirtless. His nephew, Max, finally talked him into playing in the sprinkler at one of their summer gatherings. He strolled out of the house as uncomfortable as could be, wearing a pair of his brother's swim trunks hanging dangerously low on his narrow hips. I did things to myself later that night when I was alone, a lady never speaks of in public. Since I'm no lady, you should know I got myself off twice with images of a wet Samuel standing in the middle of the yard, pretending to have fun with his nephew in the sprinkler. Oh, I think he had fun, in the only way he knows how. Even though he stood paralyzed while Max ran repeatedly through the water, he enjoyed watching his nephew play. As I finish my perusal of his body, that's when I notice something off. This man wears suits for a living and is always so well put together. I'm even willing to place a bet on the fact his underwear probably matches his tie. No, wait, I take that back. Samuel is definitely a tidy-whities guy. His dress shoes probably cost more than my entire outfit, and I know for a fact he gets monthly manicures because my bestie told me. That's why when my eyes reach his feet, I know something is much out of character for Mr. Samuel Grayson. I bust out laughing, which causes him to look over his shoulder from his crouched position. Oh my God, Sammy! I knew you loved my gift, I exclaim, my eyes riveted to the completely inappropriate trouser socks I found online for Samuel's birthday this past summer. Realization sets in, causing him to stand and spin around. I don't know what you're talking about, he scoffs, embarrassment marring his handsome features. Of course, I can't let this go, which is why I fling myself onto the floor at his feet, pull up his pant legs to get a good look at what he's wearing, not even caring my long, flowy skirt is bunched up around my thighs. Let me see! I hang on for dear life to his legs as he tries to shake me off like a dog trying to hump his leg. Get off me, he grumbles, trying to buck me from his body. But I'm part spider monkey and there's no way I'm letting go of his legs without seeing the goods he's trying to hide first. Suddenly, though, he stops moving. I stop moving. I look up and realize our position would definitely border on scandalous if the right individual were to pop their head in this room. My face is there, right there, and he knows exactly how close I am to his pool stick because it starts to grow inches from my face. You're wearing my socks. The words come out raspy and needy as my eyes connect with his. He swallows hard but maintains eye contact.
It was laundry day, and I didn't have a chance to stop by the dry cleaners to pick up my clothes.
You dry clean your socks? I ask, glancing back down at the multiple sex position socks he's wearing beneath his fancy suit. Yes, you heard me right. Sex position socks. I thought they were hilarious when I found them online, knowing he'd hate everything about them. So I bought them for his birthday.
Doesn't everyone dry clean their socks?
He asks incredulously. I shrug. I don't wear socks. Glancing down at my well-worn brown sandals with my painted toes on full display. He does the same, his eyes lingering a few extra seconds on my hot pink toes. Looking from his face to his socks, I can't help but smile wide and say,
You love me.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?